Hi, I'm Ashley Gallagher from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insight, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. On this month's episode, we spoke with Deep Ead, the founder and host of the RxPose podcast, about independent pharmacist prescribing.
So can you just start by giving a brief overview of the independent pharmacists prescribing, and what does this current landscape look like in this space?
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here and to be discussing this really important topic. Pharmacist independent prescribing is a really interesting topic, and the landscape, I think, has evolved over time. One thing that I will urge people to look at to better understand the topic is there is a paper that was published in 2016 that's called The Continuum of Pharmacist Prescribing. It's by Adams and Weaver, and they actually just published a new paper, a revisit called The Revisiting the Continuum, this past year in 2023. That really helps to level set with terminology, pros and cons, and give people a better highlight of pharmacist prescribing in general. But today we're talking about independent prescribing. And so I'll give you an idea of what that looks like. This, in terms of the North America, this really dates back to the year 2008 in Canada, actually. Pharmacists in Alberta, Canada have been independent prescribers since 2008. And so they were really one of the very first provinces out there to move forward with allowing this. And they've published a ton of amazing studies on some of the results that they've had. Now, within the United States, over the past few years, dating back to about 2017, Idaho was the first state that started begin working on these initiatives. They included expanding prescriptive authority and moved away since the beginning of when they started this initiative, moved from bright line rules to more of a standard of care style of enforcement. And that's an important piece to note, because what that allowed them to do is to expand the way that pharmacists could be independent prescribers. So when they first passed their laws and rules, they were allowing for conditions that do not require a new diagnosis, that were minor and generally self-limiting, or would have some sort of a test like a CLIA wave test that could be used to help with diagnosis or clinical decision making. Since then, they've actually expanded further and moving towards standard of care, more of that medical medicine type model, where pharmacists can independently prescribe within their training, education, and within that standard of care. You know, what are the guidelines? What would other pharmacists that would have the same setting, education, training, et cetera, do in those cases? So Idaho really started this pathway. Colorado is another state that passed Senate Bill 21094 in 2021, which adopted within their definition of practice of pharmacy something very similar to what Idaho started out with. Alaska also in 2022 passed House Bill 145. Which added some language for pharmacists to be able to perform independent services. Now, since then, the board has been discussing and talking about, and there's been interpretations about the language. And so it sounds like they've moved towards independent in terms of patient care services, but they're not quite there yet in terms of independent prescribing. And it sounds like that may be something that's coming on the horizon. Utah is another state that passed House Bill 178 in 2021, which amended the definition of practice of pharmacy that includes issuing a prescription in accordance with some of the rules and statutes. Again, Utah's board, I think, took a different stance, and they may not also quite be there fully yet, but we'll kind of have to wait to see if they make additional changes. Montana is the most recent state this past year in 2023 with Senate Bill 112 that follows a very similar pathway that Idaho started with and where Colorado ended up with. So they become another state now where pharmacists can prescribe independently for certain conditions. And I think kind of looking at the horizon, other states such as Alaska, which looks like they may be making updates in the coming years, and potentially the state of Washington, which has also been discussing. So I would say that's just generally speaking where we're at right now within the United States. Thinking about this from maybe a broader sense of looking for this next year from the kind of legislative regulatory perspective, I've mentioned a couple of those states and what's on the horizon, but I think I look at this from a little bit different of a perspective. What can pharmacists expect in the development of the idea of prescribing? Well, I think we're going to be looking into additional models for payers and billing. I know that that is one of the potential challenges that people face. Albertsons is a really actually a good example, and a few other companies out on the West, Mountain West and West Coast, which have led the way in starting to pilot and implement working with different payers and billing models to be able to implement these within practice, kind of within that community or, you know, that retail type of pharmacy setting. So I think that that's going to be something that continues to gain some momentum this coming year. And continuing to move towards states, I believe, are continuing to move towards and look at this whole model of standard of care, which I mentioned previously, looking at, you know, from a bright line rules perspective to a standard of care model. The bright line rules model is traditionally what we've had from a regulatory and legislative perspective in pharmacy. The standard of care model is really what we've looked at from all other aspects of healthcare. So physicians, doctors, nurses, etc., they are operating in that standard of care model. So it seems like as more states move towards or continue to discuss standard of care, maybe in the year 2024, we will continue to see additional states making movement towards that, which then can open up some pathways to various types of independent prescribing. So I do believe that that's another area to continue to watch for this coming year and within the next few years. I also think that there's continued exploration of cost effectiveness and studying the cost effectiveness of having pharmacists being independent prescribers. So as I had mentioned previously, there are some great studies out of Alberta, Canada that showcase this, and there are now beginning to opportunities within the United States to also look at cost effectiveness of when you have pharmacists. And lastly, advocacy efforts, shifting towards more of a delegatory model where pharmacists can have sufficient resources, staffing time, et cetera, to utilize professional judgment, much similar to what doctors and nurse practitioners have been within that medical model of looking at what advocacy efforts are going to continue to move towards that delegatory model to open up things like prescribing for pharmacists.
In light of the updated laws and regulations, especially on a state-by-state basis, what are some of the additional responsibilities or challenges that pharmacists could be faced with?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting question, and there are really a few different buckets that I've identified. And this is not an all-inclusive list, but I think these may be the ones that people would either think of or hopefully not think of, and also ones that come to mind when we talk about moving forward with prescribing. So number one on my list is emotions. I believe that emotions play a big part in our advocacy discussions and our general discussions of the topic. It is a challenge that we face in terms of moving forward. There's a lot of efforts within moving towards pharmacists to be independent prescribers, which leads me to the second one, and you'll see where these are linked, of confidence, risk aversion, and fear of failure. So if you combine those two pillars, emotions, lack of confidence, risk aversion, and fear of failure, I think that those are some of the responsibilities and challenges that pharmacists face. If we're utilizing confidence, lack of confidence, and we don't have the confidence to move forward as an independent prescriber, as shown by some of our studies, just generally speaking. And then risk aversion. Pharmacists are very risk averse. They don't want to necessarily always take the risks or be the person who is liable or in charge for certain things. And then that last one, fear of failure. So when you mix all of those together, it creates a perfect storm for hesitancy to move forward. And that is a challenge as pharmacists that we're going to have to overcome and continue to work on. Another one that I can think of, which kind of relates a little bit to the laws and regulations, but I think it's worth noting, is the political and turf wars that we face. You know, on the political level, it's tough to get things by medical associations. It's tough to battle with in our own profession, within our own associations, within our own organizations, and the turf wars that occur. And that also links back to emotions, right? People often are throwing out emotional arguments, and that's a challenge. We're going to have to overcome those emotional challenges. We're going to have to overcome the political turf wars in order to continue to move forward. So I think that that's a really good one to note. The last two I'll mention will be, number one would be billing and insurance, and number two would be time, workflow, and resources. So when it comes to billing and insurance, of course, as we know, that is a challenge that pharmacists face all throughout the profession. How can you perform a service such as prescribing, and how can you get reimbursed and or paid for that service? And also, how can you work with insurances to be recognized to also have the outcomes and the value to be reimbursed for these services? So that's another challenge that I believe is always present with this, but definitely one we're going to have to overcome. The last one, time, workflow, and resources. Of course, a lot of pharmacists are under a lot of strain. There's challenges within our operations and workflow. There's challenges with resources. Of course, we've seen headlines about shortages within pharmacy schools and their applications being down, and the future of pharmacy, as well as with technicians and turnover. So we're really going to have to face that challenge of optimizing, using automation, using delegation, and optimizing the operations and some of the things that we work on a day-to-day basis to open up and shift our time and resources to be able to prescribe.
As a pharmacist with the prescribing authority, what would the benefits be for patients, and what medications and disease states and conditions would be most affected by independent prescribing?
I really love this question, because ultimately, at the end of the day, it's exactly that. What are the benefits for patients? At the end of the day, it's great to have prescriptive authority as any healthcare professional, but you have to look at it from a patient perspective, because ultimately, that's who we're serving. And I think the biggest one that hopefully no one out there could argue with will be access to care. So having another highly trained and educated healthcare professional within the team who can help with disease state management allows for individuals to have additional access to someone who can help them manage their disease states and conditions, and can do it at a high level. There's a famous statistic that I think a lot of people throw around where, you know, most people within the United States live within like 5 to 10 miles of a pharmacy. Obviously, there's individuals out there that live in rural communities, but a majority of individuals within America have a pharmacy somewhere accessible to them. And with the increase in things like technology, telepharmacy, et cetera, and the internet, we're also increasing the way we can access care in that way as well. But I think that's the biggest benefit to a patient. They have the access to a pharmacist and someone who's highly trained, who is the medication expert, that can help them with managing their disease states and their medications, and can help them with, you know, with guidance in terms of that prescriptive authority. I think a lot of people, when they look at prescriptive authority and benefit for patients, they think, well, if you have prescriptive authority, that means you're just only going to be prescribing a bunch of medications. But that's not always true. You know, sometimes you're actually looking at someone's list of medications and optimizing what medications they're on. I think we can actually also help patients with the cost of their medications. as a pharmacist, you're closest to the costs of the medication from anybody on the healthcare team, generally speaking. So if you're looking at a patient's list and are able to help manage that list and help prescribe or deprescribe some medications, you can help them with the cost and the cost savings where a lot of other health professionals may not have access to some of those things. So I think that that's another benefit, is the cost effectiveness that pharmacists bring to the patients. Now, in terms of what medications and disease states would be affected the most, I don't really have a crystal ball because honestly, it depends on what setting we're talking about and what community and what state. So if you're working within a health system or ambulatory type care versus, say, a community retail versus, say, a mail specialty, it really depends on the scenario. So pharmacists that would be working within our health systems and ambulatory care, well, what does that community, generally speaking, suffer from or have the most needs for in terms of prescriptive authority? You can look at things like, you know, when I'm kind of painting a broad stroke here of minor ailments such as strep throat and flu and COVID and some of these outpatient, you know, pieces where you can come in, you have a simple diagnostic platform protocol, you have a test that you can rely on in terms of helping with the diagnostic and clinical decision-making. I think that those probably are more applicable for some of the like community type pharmacies, but in our health systems and ambulatory, I mean, it can be very complex. It could be things like managing, patients with HIV, managing patients who are on blood thinners, who are on, you know, diabetes, hypertension, cholesterol. I mean, can those things be done in the community setting? Yes, but it'll just depend on the needs of that community, the prevalence of those disease states, and again, the comfortability of the pharmacist within those settings. So I think that, there's a lot of disease states and medications, et cetera, that could be affected. It really comes down to the state, the setting, and the community.
In the states with pharmacist prescribing, what would the steps that pharmacists need to take in order to become prescribers? Would they just automatically be like grandfathered into the prescribing, or would they need to get like registered?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So it is dependent upon which state we're talking about. But generally speaking, I'm not going to go into details of, you know, every single state and what their requirements are. But generally speaking, if you look at how the laws and rules are written in states such as Montana and Colorado and, you know, previously how Idaho started, there really wasn't anything specific like you would have to go and take, you know, this type of training, or you would have to have this many continuing education credits, et cetera. Most of the language that would impact pharmacist prescribing was really more so you just have to follow what is outlined within the laws and rules. And so when we take a look at some of the language in, you know, say Colorado or Montana, for example, the language, generally speaking, has some limitations in terms of, you know, age and FDA approval and, disease states that do not require a new diagnosis, for example. Like, these are some of the limits that were placed within the language in these states. So a pharmacist doesn't necessarily have to go out of their way to do something specific to become a prescriber. I believe in Alberta, Canada, for example, they have or have had and historically you have to have like 1 year of experience to be a independent prescriber. And I believe you may have to register with the province or something like that to let them know that you're, you know, performing that. In the states that I'm aware of within the United States right now, I do not believe they have any experience requirements. I do not believe they have, you know, like a continuing education or training requirement. What it really comes down to, honestly, is going to be the workplace that you're at. So your company is going to probably have certain policies and procedures, and some of them may actually prohibit you from partaking in this. Some of them may allow for you to partake in prescribing, and they may have a certain protocol or policy that they want you to follow. So most of what I've seen comes down to company policy and procedures, or like a health system, you know, hospital, ambulatory care, et cetera. If you're in those settings, it'll come down to what are the allowances from your company's perspective.
In your opinion, how might the continued expansion of pharmacist prescribing impact the overall healthcare landscape in the states that are considering similar updates to their laws and regulations?
I think that it's extremely important for every state to continue to expand towards independent pharmacist prescribing and the overall healthcare landscape in those states. I believe that one of the most important pieces that they should be examining in this overall concept is moving towards standard of care from an enforcement perspective. I think that moving towards a standard of care versus the current general, enforcement strategy of bright line rules really opens up the ability for pharmacists to practice at a level of where they truly can and should be practicing. But also, it places that flexibility to where if individuals within a certain company or a certain workspace or a certain area do not or are not capable, are not maybe comfortable, are not trained to do so, they don't have to do independent pharmacist prescribing, right? So moving towards that standard of care model, I believe just allows for more flexibility and it gives more autonomy to pharmacists, ultimately leading them to be able to independently prescribe. So I think that all states should continue to consider, but also they should be in tandem looking at moving towards standard of care versus bright line rules. And that is a great pathway that can also link independent pharmacist prescribing.
And lastly, as we're beginning to wrap up, is there anything else that pharmacists should know about independent prescribing?
My best advice is to not be afraid of independent pharmacist prescribing. I believe that it is a natural progression as pharmacy has continued to evolve, as the needs of patients and healthcare continue to evolve. It is a really great opportunity for pharmacists to expand into the autonomous allowances to practice at a level that we're capable of. And also, if you're not someone who's comfortable with independent prescriptive authority, or you think it does not going to work within your healthcare setting or where you're working or your company, that's completely okay. What we're not advocating for is that every single pharmacist who works should be an independent prescriber. It's more so that there should be an allowance and a choice by individuals who are capable, have the training, the education, the knowledge, or within the settings that, it makes the most sense to be able to prescribe. So I would say for anyone out there listening, don't be afraid of the topic. Educate yourself on the topic and really start to learn about that continuum of prescriptive authority to better gauge where you're at or where you could be in the future.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we will be joined by another key opinion leader in the pharmacy space.